Hi there, we really hope you enjoy this teaching from the Message Trust. To find out more about all the exciting things we're doing, check out our website, message.org.uk.
I had a privilege on Saturday. I went to Cliff Festival. I think a few of us have done it. It's a great thing at Cliff College. And just had a really powerful time, actually. It's been a little while since I've been in front of young people. I realised that my role increasingly is to let other people do it or to train them how to do it. And it's a sad reality of kind of my maturing, I guess. Maturing? And Sarah's like, no, definitely not maturing. Anyway, just the stage I'm in at the moment with everything that's going on with Hire and everything that's going on here. It was really nice to get out and just preach the gospel again and to share in front of young people. So I did a seminar about sharing your faith and how do you reach the school and all that kind of stuff. And just sharing, and it was just a great time with about 20 or 25 young people. At the end of this, young girl came to me and said, so I've heard you talk about Jesus quite a lot. It's like, yeah, that, you know, kind of thinking, that's kind of the whole point of the seminar. Let's talk about Jesus a lot. I guess, well, I'm not actually sure I'm a Christian. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. So we dove into it and got to lead her to Jesus right there in front of me, which was just amazing. Like this moment where I'm not preaching the gospel, just talking about Jesus. And there's just something going on in the head, like, because talking about personal faith and how it's not just something that we do out of duty, but it's out of our passion for Jesus and our relationship with him. And clearly the cogs were just going in the head, like, I don't know that passion. I don't know him personally. I'm like, come on, you can know him now. So led her to Jesus there, which was very, very cool, with Joe Boston, which was a lot of fun. And then preached in the evening. And the theme was the Holy Spirit, and I felt the Holy Spirit lead me back to the cross and just got this amazing chance to preach the gospel again, and went for the response. And there's a moment, if you've ever preached the gospel in front of people, where you've put the gospel out there, you think you've done okay, as in it wasn't a train wreck, so you're like, okay, I have served the Lord well. You know you prayed, and then there's that moment, there's that pause. It's the kind of the pregnant pause, or that moment where you're like, okay, I've done all I can, God saves people, it's not my work, and you pause, and you wait, and you look, and you see, and you're trying to sense what God is doing again, and you're like, and it was an awkwardly long time. I was going to say, I was absolutely full of faith after this Girl That Comes Faith seminar, and it was just dead quiet, and I was just like, okay, maybe this wasn't to be. And then I just felt the Spirit nudge me again. He's going, just wait. And this young lad right in the middle who looked too cool for school, like, you know, those guys that you can see, they're surrounded by some girls clearly interested in him. He was nudging his mates halfway through the talk and kind of like, you know, having a bit of a giggle. And you could see his brain just being like, again, just the cogs whirring. I'm like, that's who God's going to say. And he literally just stood up in front of everyone, the only person that responded. And it just says, God's, and then I just felt God speak to me. So I just decided to prophesy of him right there in front of everyone. Just said, I really feel like God's put a line inside of you and all this kind of stuff. And just started speaking out what God was saying. And he came to find me afterwards and said, you know, kind of, thank you so much. I said, well, first of all, it's not me. I just shared Jesus. It's all Jesus' work. I had this thing about spirit animals. I'm like, right, you know, that well-known spiritual idea of I have a spirit animal, and it always felt like it was a cat, and I'm like, oh, okay, right. You know, when you kind of like, I mean, I'm used to these conversations. I still remember the guy that convinced me that he was a Nordic god in school and was like, I am from Scandinavia and I have a sword inside of me. I'm like, right, school's ministry, the best place to do ministry. And so he goes off from one, but he said, and I feel like, well, when you're speaking, what God was saying is, not only am I saved, but I've been upgraded. I'm just like, yes, come on, you know. And this is a hilarious moment, which I don't know what to do with that, apart from just to share with it. How good is God that he just spoke something to me and kind of prophesied the guy, and it just meant something to him, and he was just blown away that Jesus was real, that he was saved. He was just, you could see it was a very profound moment for him. And also inside of all of his spirituality, he realized that, okay, Jesus is Lord. He's upgraded. He's given me this line, and it's for his purposes, and it's to roar inside of me for the rest of my life. And just hearing him do that, I'm just like, how amazing is that? We do some incredible work, don't we, as a movement? We get to the privilege of doing something amazing. So this morning, I wanted to share a few things with you. So if you've got your Bibles, we're going to jump around a little bit. We're going to be in Judges. We're going to go to 1 Samuel, Genesis, and Matthew. And this talk, for those of you that communicate or are creative in any way, you know that time when kind of God starts to speak or something starts to be birthed inside of you, and it takes a couple of days, weeks, sometimes even months to become reality. This preach, this what I want to share this morning, started a few months ago when I was down in Cambridge. And we were launching Higher Cams, and we were doing the youth launch there. And I was preaching out of Gideon and was challenging the young people to maybe they feel like the 300 in Gideon's story, but actually that they're going to be the people that will take an army, and they're going to take a nation, and they're going to win a territory back. So I want to read this to you. So it's from verse 1 through to the end of 22, and then we'll get into it. So, and also there's some proper old words that I'm just going to have my best at because I'm not always very good with the Old Testament names. So, chapter 7, sorry, Judges 7, verses 1 to 22. Let's give you a chance to find it. So, Zerubbabel, this is Gideon, and his army got up early and went as far as the spring of Harod. The armies of Midian were camped north of them in the valley near the hill of Moreh. The Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many warriors with you. If I let all of you fight the Midianites, the Israelites will boast to me that they will have saved themselves by their own strength. Therefore, tell the people, whoever is timid or afraid may leave this mountain and go home." So 22,000 of them went home. I mean, could you imagine that mass exodus? That's got to be pretty terrifying. Leaving only 10,000 who were willing to fight. I mean, that's like a football stadium's gone and a football stadium's left behind. It's madness. But the Lord told Gideon, "There are still too many." I mean, that's got to test your faith, isn't it? Bring them down to the spring and I will test them to determine who will go with you and who will not. When Gideon took his warriors down to the water, the Lord told him, "Divide the men into two groups. In one group, put all of those who cup water in their hands and lap it up with their tongues like dogs. In the other group, put all those who kneel down and drink with their mouth in the stream." Only 300 of the men drank with their hands. All the others got down on their knees and drank with their mouths in the stream. The Lord told Gideon, "With these 300 men, I will rescue you and give you your victory over Midianites. Send all the others home." So Gideon collected the provisions and the ram's horns of the other warriors and sent them home. But he kept the 300 men with him. The Midianite camp was in the valley just below Gideon. That night the Lord said, "Get up, go down into the Midianite camp, for I have given you victory over them. But if you are afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah. Listen to what the Midianites are saying, and you will be greatly encouraged. Then you will be eager to attack." So Gideon took Purah and went down to the edge of the enemy camp. The armies of Midian, Amalek, and the people of the east had settled in the valley like a swarm of locusts. Their camels were like grains of sand on the seashore, too many to count. Gideon crept up just as a man was telling his companion about a dream. The man said, "I had this dream, and in my dream, a loaf of barley bread came tumbling down into the Midianite camp. It hit a tent, turned it over, and knocked it flat." His companion answered, "Your dream can mean only one thing. God has given Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelites, victory over Midian and over its allies." When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he bowed in worship before the Lord. Then he returned to the Israelite camp and shouted, "Get up! For the Lord has given you victory over the Midianite hordes." He divided the 300 men into three groups and gave each man a ram's horn and a clay jar with a torch in it. Then he said to them, "Keep your eyes on me. When I come to the edge of the camp, do just as I do. As soon as I and those with me blew the ram's horn, blow your horns too all around the entire camp and shout, 'For the Lord and for Gideon.'" It was just after midnight, after the changing of the guard, when Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the Midianite camp. Suddenly they blew the ram's horn and broke the clay jars. Then all three groups blew their horns and broke their jars. They held the blazing torches in their left hand and the horns in their right hand. And they all shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Each man stood at his position around the camp and watched as the Midianites rushed around in a panic, shouting as they ran to escape. When the 300 Israelites blew their ram's horn, the Lord caused the warriors in the camp to fight against each other and their swords. Those who were not being killed fled to places as far as Beth near Zerahath and to the border of Abel-Mehalah and Tabatha. There we go, that's good enough. Then Gideon sent out the warriors of Naphtaliah, Asher, and Manasseh, who joined in chasing the army of Midian. Gideon also sent messengers through the hill country of Ephraim, saying, "Come down to attack the Midianites, cut them off at the shallow pass to the Jordan and the river of Beth-barah." So all the men of Ephraim did as they were told. They captured Oreb and Zeb, the two Midianite commanders commanders, killing Oreb at the rock of Oreb and Zeb at the winepress of Zeb. And they continued to chase the Midianites. Afterward, the Israelites brought the herds of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon, who was by the river Jordan. Got there. Amazing. Great. I mean, just an incredible piece of the Bible, I think. And an unbelievable thing, because could you imagine being Gideon? I mean, could you imagine you're looking out and you've got this mighty wild army. In the world's eyes, you are a top dog. You've got 30,000 people that are ready to go and make an attack. You know, you have been sharpening swords. You've got the best camels. You've got good horses. You've got, you've been running drills. You are all sorted. Everyone's looking at you going, you are powerful. You've got it figured out. You've got your strategies, you've got your playbooks, you can take anybody, basically. But God had a different idea. God had a different heavenly strategy for how he was going to win that battle with Gideon. So what he did is he had his person in Gideon. He had his leader, his individual, the person that he trusted to win this battle. But he had the wrong strategy. He was going out in man's eyes. He was going out in how the world would have won that battle. And God was like, no. This is not your battle to win, Gideon. This is my battle. This is my thing. And you're going to do it my way. So do you have faith in me? Do you trust me, Gideon? And all the way through, God is pushing Gideon to say, do you trust me? He's refining his leader. He's refining the person, the individual that he's chosen to back. He's saying, do you trust me or do you trust yourself and your worldly strategy? And could you imagine that first time when he had to stand in front of 30,000 people? That's an entire football stadium. You know, he's feeling pretty good. Hey, guys. So we're awesome, right? Anyone scared? And he might be expecting a few people to go. He might be expecting maybe a few people to shuffle off in the background a bit quietly, and everyone else was going to give this mighty roar of, yeah, let's go. So he might have gone from 30,000 to maybe 29,557. But instead, 20,000 people. And if you've ever been to a football match or into a stadium for a gig, there's that point where then there's the exodus, isn't there, when you have to try and get out. And when you're watching football, you've got to decide, do you go in injury time and try and just nip the end of it, but then you might miss some great goals. Or if you're at a gig, you've got think, shall I just miss the finale or shall I watch the finale sort of by the fire exit and then just like lights go straight out. There's that horde, isn't there? There's just that massive like just throb of people just exiting the stadium. Could you imagine how Gideon felt at that moment when this thing is just like, why are you going? But he's been asked to trust God, hasn't he? He's been asked to say, God is going to give me this battle. I've got to trust in that. So 10,000, okay, I could do 10,000. And he goes, no, 10,000. Gideon probably still thinking, I can do that. We'll be like the ninja. We'll be like some apps are like, we'll get the best guys. We'll get the biggest guys. We'll sharpen our swords again. We'll come up with some new strategies. It's fine. We've got 10,000 people. And then God goes, no. I want to strip it down again. And it's a bit of an odd one, isn't it? Like lapping water or kneeling down. It's kind of a bit of an unusual thing, isn't it? Who would think, I know how we're going to divide men. The guys that wear deodorant and the ones that don't. Do you know what I mean? It's got that kind of, for me, it's that frivolous, isn't it? It's kind of like, or the guys that wear Nike and the ones that don't. It seems completely and utterly arbitrary. It's just kind of like, there's nothing, but that's how what God wants to do. He wants to see, will Gideon trust him again? Will Gideon trust that he has got a heavenly strategy lined up, that God has got something coming that is going to actually see the battle won? So he goes to it, he does it, and he's dutiful. And of course, he's left with the 300. Now, as 300 people, you've got to be thinking, gosh, okay, not right now, we're going to go to the SAS standard. Ninjas don't cut it anymore. Like, we're going SAS, we've got to get some bombs together, we've got to get something insane. Something has got to be out of this world for me and this tiny army to win the battle. And then God gives him the strategy. He shows him how to do it. And in the end, they barely actually do any fighting because it's God's battle, isn't it? It's God's fight. And he wins it and he absolutely routs the army and it's all done. And you can imagine at the start, they're creeping up to sort of that bit where he's going in. And God's given him a bit of grace there, actually. To go, come on, you've trusted me so far. Let me just show you this is your battle. You're going to win. And could you imagine him and his mate crawling on their belly, like bricking it, probably sweating a little bit. And all that kind of like, what's about to happen? And then there's this kind of this conversation going on. Oh, I had a dream. Oh, really? What happened in it? I think we're going to die. Oh, okay. Do you know what I mean? That's like the conversation around the fire. That's the sort of conversation that Gideon overhears. And you could hear, I think, like, I would just want to go, yes! Because him lying down, like, okay, this is cool, we're going to win. And he goes back, and then they attack, and of course, the rest happens. But here's the thing that I felt God was showing me as I was reading this when I was on the way to Cambridge, is that Gideon is God's person. Gideon is the leader that God has said, I'm going to use you. He then gives him the heavenly strategy, which involves often a little bit of a process, a little bit of a journey of things being stripped back. And then through the faith that Gideon could muster, through the little bit of faith he had, he was obedient and he was unswerving and was wholehearted in his approach to what God had told him to do. So I'm sure at some point Gideon was stood there with 300 men going, right, guys, here's the plan. Get some torches and we're going to shout a lot and we're going to take all of those guys. Okay. And there's that moment, I think, where Gideon probably had to take that first step forward in front of his guys, said, we're going to go and do this. And unswervingly, in whatever obedience, in whatever wholeheartedness he could muster, he just went with it. He just said, this is my time and I'm going to go. And I'm absolutely convinced that's how God uses people. That he looks for a person, he looks for a leader, he looks for an individual. He then downloads in them a heavenly strategy, often through trials or challenges or through making great choices for God. And then he's looking for wholehearted obedience and absolute unswerving holding to what God has spoken. And I had the privilege of, I got a little bit of something dropped on my desk. I don't know if it was a pre-copy, whether I stole it or whatever, but it was the latest flow that's come out. By the way, creative, you guys, unbelievable. That is a great piece of work. Where are you? Great job, guys. I loved it. Not only because there's a few of my comments in it about Higher Midlands, which was really why I was interested in it. Because, that's well worth a read, by the way. It's actually because of James Moss, James and Hannah Moss. And there's stories in there about what they're doing with Eden and what they're doing in Phalange. But I had the privilege of meeting James actually a number of years ago when the original Higher Manchester. And he was a youth pastor. He was basically running the church. He was also doing pays in his spare time. And he was he's clearly a phenomenal leader. He was clearly God's man. He was clearly someone that people around Rochdale were looking at and to. Was someone that was, Gary's like, we didn't in our church. Everybody else did, Gary. And he was a man of peace for that place and really helped us get into schools and really helped the mission go along and was clearly a person of peace and was clearly a great leader. Now, if I was James and I was and was thinking about where should I go next, you wouldn't naturally think, I know what I want to do. I want to put myself into a hard, urban, forgotten community and serve there for the rest of my life, because he was going places. So the world's wisdom would have said, James, why don't you go and take on a bigger church? Why don't you try and get yourself involved in a national ministry? Why didn't you go with what the world would want you to do? It's just, you are clearly a good leader. But instead, through a time of prayer and a process, he found himself moving into the Eden team that was moving into Phalange, which I drove past Phalange, and it fulfills every criteria, as we've become accustomed to as the message, that is an Eden estate. And yet what he did is he chose to choose heaven's strategy, not the world's strategy. He knew that heaven's strategy for him was not to go and get a bigger church and a bigger ministry and to keep stepping into bigger and bigger things, but instead was to go, God, where are you guiding me? And there's a point in the narrative that they've written up, and I don't know whether this is a quote or just a summary of what he said, but we expected Eden to be fast-paced. People tell these amazing, dramatic success stories, but we realised it would take 5 to 10 years in the making to hear these dramatic stories. I love that, because he understands something again about heaven's strategy for this estate. He understands this is going to take time. He understands that it's not going to be this wham, bam, thank you, man ministry where I'm going to rock up in Phalange. We're going to transform all this urban and deprived communities into being something that is going to be utterly amazing. And it's all going to be because of us. And Eden's name's going to be in lights and I'm going to become the big dog. No, what he understood is he's got to lay his life down and Hannah's got to lay their life down. And they've got to live their life in this community and they've got to serve it and they've got to love it and they've got to spend time in it and their success will come over 5 to 10 years. And that's heaven's strategy. And what I love is that every day they have to live life out in the open and they have to choose faith and they have to live wholeheartedly and they have to hold unswervingly to the belief that Phalange will turn around. Not because of what they're doing, because of the power of the gospel at work in that estate. And when you start to understand these three things, that God looks for some people, he downloads his strategy and then people by faith take a step and take another step and hold unswervingly and have wholehearted obedience. You start to see it throughout the Bible. So if you've got one, go to jump to 1 Samuel 17. I want to take us to David and Goliath. And again, I was going to read from 20 to 51, but we're running out of time a little bit. So I trust that you know the story of David and Goliath a little bit. But at the start, David is a shepherd. He's a shepherd boy. He's not an army. He's not some guy that's used to holding a sword and a spear and understand military strategy. He's a shepherd's boy. You know, he hangs out. He's even a creative, dare I say it. Kind of, you know, some of the creatives are not the toughest in the world. You know, he's more used to playing with... I think I've just lost my entire department. I love you guys. But my point is, he is not a warrior. You're not going to send him in to fight. You're going to send him in to sing and to look after sheep. So he goes to visit his brothers who are in the army and are camped out and have got all the stuff. They look great. They look like they're ready to take on the battle. They look like they're ready to, in everyone's eyes, these guys are the chosen ones. These are God's people to win the battle and to win the fight. But yet, as the journey goes on, they're terrified. They're not God's person. And heaven's strategy is different to what the world would say. The world would say, right, well, everyone charge. It's only Goliath. We can take him out. We'll all charge him at once. He can't take all of us out. If some of us will die, it'll be okay because we'll kill Goliath and we'll do it. It'll be great. But actually, no, heaven's strategy was different. Heaven was to send in this small boy with four stones and a slingshot. And he took out Goliath because he trusted in God and he held unswervingly and was obedient and was full of faith. And I'm sure that David at some point, as he was scooping down to take the pebbles out of the river, would have been like, flipping Nora, this better work, God. And he'd been shaped and he'd been changed. And there's a whole bit that you could talk about how David was shaped out when he was looking after the sheep and he was fending off the lions and he was looking after the sheep when no one else was watching. That he was honed and he was crafted and he was ready for that moment. Where heaven's strategy was not to take a sword with 10,000 people and run down a hillside and take someone out. What was to send in basically a small child with four stones and a slingshot and would take out this almighty army, would take out the enemies of God. So let's jump back to Genesis. Genesis 6, 8 to 22. And we will read this one because I think it's important. This is Noah. Actually, we'll go from verse 1, sorry. But God remembered Noah, all the wild animals and livestock with him in the boats. He sent, I've got the wrong bit. Sorry, there we go. Genesis 6, 8, there we go, the Noah story. But Noah found favor with the Lord. This is verse 8. But Noah found favor with the Lord. This is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a religious man, the only blameless person living on earth at the time, and he walked in close fellowship with God. Noah was the father of three sons, Shem, Ham, and... Oh, I shouldn't have gone to the Old Testament. Japheth. Now God saw that the earth had become corrupt and was filled with violence. God observed all this corruption in the world, for everyone on earth was corrupt. So God said to Noah, I have decided to destroy all living creatures, for they have filled the earth with violence. Yes, I will wipe them all out along with the earth. Build a large boat from cypress wood and waterproof it with tar inside and out. Then construct decks and stalls throughout its interior. Make the boat 450 feet long, 70 feet wide, and 45 feet high. Leave an 18-inch opening below the roof all the way around the boat. Put the door on the side and build three decks beside the boat, lower, middle, and upper. Look, I'm about to cover the earth with a flood that will destroy every living thing that breathes. Everything on earth will die, but I will confirm my covenant with you. So enter the boat, you and your wife and your sons and their wives. Bring a pair of every kind of animal, a male and a female, into the boat with you to keep them alive during the flood. Pairs of every kind of bird and every kind of animal and every kind of small animal that scurries along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. And be sure to take on board enough food for your family and for all animals. So Noah did everything exactly as God had commanded them. And then the flood came. And I don't know about you, but again, this speaks, doesn't it, of God's person. Noah found favor with the Lord. He'd been, before the strategy came, he had to choose to follow God. He had to choose to be a follower of what God wanted. And yet everyone around him was going in a different direction. So this was a man of character. This was a man that God knew he could trust. And then could you imagine getting that formal and detailed a download from God? I rarely find that God actually speaks to me with that level of clarity that he gives measurements. And he tells me what to do. But could you imagine having your prayer time like we're going to do today in the between 12 and 3, and just kind of suddenly God, Matt falls prostrate on the floor and starts saying, I feel like God's giving us a building in Canada, and it's going to be 200,000 square feet, and it's going to have a glass front. And, you know, could you just imagine that sort of level of detail and that level of heavenly strategy being downloaded from us? Matt's like, yes, it happened this morning. That's what he's saying. But absolutely, heaven's strategy doesn't always look like we expect it to look like. And could you imagine Noah? Just that download would be the weirdest thing ever. A boat. We're not even, there's no water. I don't even know what to do. Why the animals? I don't even like snakes. There's going to be this amazing moment where I can just see Noah talking to God and just being like, what on earth is going on here? This is so detailed. It has to be from you. This has to be your strategy, God, because this is bonkers. This doesn't make any sense. And I trust that I hear from God, and I know that I hear from God. So I'm going to build this boat, and I'm going to put my sons on it, and I'm going to put my birds and my animals and my snakes and my woodlouse and everything else that goes on it. I'm going to put it in there. But I tell you what, you better come through. If this is your strategy, I trust you. And I love that then Noah goes and builds the boat, that he puts one step in front of the other. With the faith that he has in God, he has wholehearted obedience, an unswerving commitment to what God has spoken. And he does it. And what happens? The flood comes. And what happens is everyone else gets wiped out. And God is true to what he says, and he saves, because that is his work and it's what he does. And I sometimes feel like with higher, particularly, we have these moments where we are just pushing on with heaven's strategy, that we are convinced this is the way that we're going to see a culture-shifting number of disciples. We're absolutely convinced that God is going to save and he's going to transform. And it feels like every time that we get together and we pray and we think and we reflect on higher, we're getting more and we're adding more to it. But ultimately, God is still looking at people. He's still trying to choose people to use. So when we share some of the stories from higher around some amazing youth groups that have, like the one in Solihull, where this youth leader took 5 young people along to the youth conference. They got absolutely fired up, super excited about gospel and mission and evangelism and seeing something happen in their school. We couldn't get into their schools, so they just decided to invite one of their mates to gigs. All 5 of them invite one friend. So they came to the gigs, and of course, you know where I'm going. They all brought a mate. All of them got saved, and their youth group went from 5 to 10, and it's now still in the vicar's front room. It's not like it's going to transform Solihull instantly, but it is a beautiful expression of heaven's strategy. Just using beautiful young people who are cowering away in their vicar's lounge, probably barely saved, just desperate to do something for God, getting trained up, equipped, just like getting the heaven strategy and just going, you know what, I am going to put one foot in front of the other. With the faith I can find, with the obedience I can muster, I'm going to hold unswerving to what I've learned, and I'm going to go. Because I'm God's person. And I'm going to make sure that happens. And there's this amazing moment which I want to finish with where Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane. So we're going to finish in Matthew 26. I'm going to read from 36 to 46. Then Jesus went with them to the olive grove called Gethsemane. And he said, sit here while I go over there to pray. He took Peter and Zebedee's 2 sons, James and John, and he became anguished and distressed. He told them, my soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. He went on a little further and bowed his face to the ground, praying, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. So I'm going to pause there for a minute. See, Jesus is the ultimate example of a heavenly strategy and a person that God had chosen. He was going to use Jesus, his own son, his own flesh and blood, God himself on this earth, was the person that God was going to use to make sure that everyone could have access to him. Heaven's strategy was different to the world. The world was looking, the Jews were looking for a conquering king. They were expecting someone to be born into a royal family, maybe someone to be born into someone of power, maybe to come as a king, to maybe come and destroy the world, to be the person that was going to be naturally the person everyone looked to, be ridiculously good looking, ridiculously tall, arguably middle class, brown hair and approximately this high. that's a bad joke, isn't it? He won't look anything like me. But instead, what happened was he came and he was born in an area that no one knew about. He was born in a stable, to a humble family. And the amazing thing about Jesus is he defied everything. But yet, time is actually completely hinged around him. He completely destroyed Satan. He completely and utterly restored relationship. He was the most powerful and the most amazing and the most incredible person ever to walk this earth. Yet, he still had to go through heaven's strategy. And heaven's strategy was that he went to the cross. Heaven's strategy was that he did have to die so that he could rise again. Heaven's strategy was absolutely that he would go through the most excruciating pain so that we didn't have to, so that we didn't have to know death, so we didn't have to know what it's like to live for eternity with sin, so that we could have freedom from that, so that we could be removed from that. And here in this moment in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus knows that. He already understands that his strategy is to die. His heaven's strategy is to go to the cross. Yet, with the faith that he has and the obedience he's showing and holding unswervingly, he is praying, saying, God, is there any other way? I will do this, but please, is there any other way? And as he's praying, God's, and as we know, God says, absolutely, as we move on out of into verse 40, and then he turned to his disciples and found them asleep. And he said, Peter, couldn't you watch with me even for 1 hour? Keep watch and pray so that you will not give in to the temptation. For the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. Then Jesus left them a second time and prayed, my Father, if this cup cannot be taken away unless I drink it, your will be done. When he returned to them again, he found them asleeping, for they couldn't keep their eyes open. So he went to pray a third time, saying the same thing. Then he came to the disciples and said, go ahead and sleep. Have your rest. But look, the time has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Up, let's go. Look, my betrayer is here. And as God, as Jesus is resting, we've got his Father, as they're talking, he's looking at his disciples, his followers, the people he's going to entrust this whole ministry to, the people he's going to be looking at, and he is wrestling with their frailty and their weakness again. Is he saying, I am here, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go to the cross for you, and I'm going to entrust my kingdom to you, and you can't even stay awake. You can't even do this. And I wanted to finish on this to say, so often we read these stories in the Bible, and I'm sure Gideon, and I'm sure Noah, and I'm sure all the stories that we've looked at this morning, you've heard before. They're not new stories to you. But so often we forget the fleshiness of what it is to be in those moments, is that we know what it's like to fall asleep on Jesus. We know what it's like to not quite be faithful, to not quite understand exactly where we're going, but knowing that we've got to pursue heaven's cause and heaven's strategy. And this morning I wanted to encourage you to say, it's okay. It's okay, but you come back to God. Trust in him again. Lay it all down before him. Ask him, what do you want from me today? Where do you want me to go? Because we're a movement and a ministry and a bunch of people that I believe are called out and marked out by God for something remarkable in this nation and the nations beyond. And the things that I'm seeing and I'm hearing, it feels like every time we share a story, a prayer day, I'm just sitting there being like, how on earth are we part of this? There is salvation everywhere. There's transformation everywhere. Money's coming in. Amazing people are joining the movement. We're filling vacancies. We've got obviously amazing stuff going on in the Midlands now. It's just like, this is great stuff. This is amazing stuff. Yet so often we forget that actually in the midst of all of that, we can be a little bit fleshy and find it a little bit hard, and we need to push on. And I want to encourage us to say, please cling on to heaven's strategy. Please trust in our God. He has got something remarkable marked out for you and in your work and what you're doing today and over the weeks and months to come.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check out message.org.uk to find out how you can support or even get involved with one of our teams.